Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
The following is an iHeartRadio podcast.
The Soundtrack Show will begin in 5, 4, 3.
In 1985, one of the most significant composers in film music emerged out of a rock band with a very unique and exciting sound. This is The Soundtrack Show. It all started with Pee Wee Herman. Welcome back to The Soundtrack Show. I'm your host, David W. Collins, and this episode is all about the early film music of one of the most talented and inspiring composers to emerge from the 1980s. A composer that went on to make his permanent mark on pop culture and is still creating wonderful film scores to this day. His name, of course, is Danny Elfman, and his story is as fascinating as his music. Part avant-garde theater performer, part rock star, part songwriter, part film composer, a multi-instrumentalist and incredible singer. And he was completely self-taught. His career as a film composer skyrocketed in just a few short years in the 1980s and produced one of the most significant composer-director collaborations in American film history. I am, of course, speaking of his work with writer, director, animator Tim Burton, and we're going to take a close look at their early films together, as well as the origins of Elfman's rock band Oingo Boingo, whose music reached millions of people and also appeared in various films throughout the 80s. And even beyond Tim Burton and Boingo, Elfman has written scores for Spider-Man, Men in Black, The Hulk, The Avengers, The 50 Shades series, Good Will Hunting, Justice League, and over 100 other movies. But it all started with Pee-wee Herman. That's right, it was actor Paul Reubens who brought Tim Burton and Danny Elfman together in 1985, with Burton asking Elfman to consider writing the score for Pee-wee's Big Adventure. But more on that later. Let's start at the beginning. Born in 1953 in Los Angeles, Danny Elfman grew up in the South LA neighborhood of Baldwin Hills, where he spent a lot of time going to the movies with his friends. It was there that he fell in love with film music, particularly the music of Bernard Herrmann, Niklas Rosa, Franz Waxman, Max Steiner, and Nino Rota, among others.
I was really inspired by film scoring at about the age 11 or 12 by Bernard Herrmann and was a huge fan of his. Steiner, Waxman, Korngold, Rocha, those are the names that I began to learn about and understand and appreciate over my teenage years and as a young man in my early 20s. They were my music teachers, I suppose. I mean, Bernard Herrmann was my master.
Elfman also used to hang out with the band kids, and he had a real knack for music. According to his older brother, Richard Elfman, quote, "Danny could just listen to an intricate Django Reinhardt guitar solo and then figure it out and play it. And then figure out the intricate Stefan Grappelli violin accompaniment," end quote. When older brother Richard moved from California to Paris, France in 1970 in order to join Le Grand Magic Circus, young Danny, still a teenager and having dropped out of high school, followed him and joined the group, playing violin in the circus. After touring with him all summer, Danny decided to embark on a tour of Africa for a year, foraging his musical way from West Africa across the continent to East Africa. While he was there, he spent his time playing violin in the streets and collecting various pieces of African percussion that he was interested in. During this time, older brother Richard moved back home to Los Angeles, and he started a theatrical musical troupe called, you ready for this? The Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, a troupe that was very similar to Spike Jones or Frank Zappa, and which played together in Los Angeles all throughout the 1970s. Eventually, Danny Elfman returned from Africa and became the musical director of the troupe. Here's another quote from Richard Elfman. Quote, "Danny returned from Africa and I installed him as our musical director. My guiding musical vision for the group was nothing contemporary. We faithfully recreated great music that audiences could no longer hear live anymore. Cab Calloway, Duke Ellington, Django Reinhardt, Josephine Baker, and did totally original off-the-wall compositions by Danny, including numbers using an array of percussion instruments that he and saxophonist Leon Schneiderman created for the group," end quote. I want to play a clip or two from the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, but before I do, I have to describe just some of the visuals of this group. First of all, many are in clown makeup, outlandish circus costumes, sometimes using absurd props like a gaseous rocket ship that sputters in time with the music, or a giant dragon, both of which were present when the group appeared on the Gong Show, by the way, and won. And they're surrounded by instruments. Danny Elfman can be seen playing percussion, saxophone, piano, and other instruments, as well as singing and being the band leader. The visuals of seeing the Mystic Knights must have left quite an impression, and from what I can gather, it was a mixture of 1970s underground counterculture, totally fueled by the musical stylings of the past. Richard Elfman describes the group like this, quote, "The Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo was an eclectic musical theater troupe. We performed in garish makeup. A typical show would contain music ranging from the 1890s to the 1950s, in addition to Danny's ethnic/avant-garde material. This version of the band employed as many as 15 musicians and dancers playing over 30 instruments," end quote. One other thing. As I play this material, try to keep Elfman's music for early Tim Burton films in your mind as you listen. Thank you.
time of night when we delight in turning in. But please remember, it's not goodbye, but just until we meet again. Until this evening, I sat there dreaming. Now I see you so clearly, and all my dreams come true as I sing to you. La 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 la.
Wow.
I say it's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. We hope that you've enjoyed our little treasure.
Well, when we play together, together, we often squeak and squeal, but we try to play in harmony. La 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 la.
To be a clown's not easy.
Not so.
Why, truly, it requires lots of pep and odd abilities.
How often must I tell you? The Oingo Boingos are not clowns, they're spacemen.
So that's your trick, I see.
La la.
Huh.
And hope that you will soon become a member of our fraternity.
But can you come together
forever?
But throw away our troubles and despairs.
And laugh till we turn green. And so, my friends, before you leave, we'd like to say goodbye.
And hope that you've enjoyed your piece of Pringle Bangle Pie.
Some people call us crazy, but as you can plainly see, we're not the least bit crazy. We're as normal as can be.
Come with us to the Pringle Bangle Bangle. You'll be surprised by the things that you will see.
While the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo never really released albums, their live show was quite popular in Los Angeles in the 70s, playing at clubs and oftentimes theaters before a movie would start. Online, I actually found a few accounts of members of the audience who saw the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo back in the 70s and listened to the scenes that they describe. Here's one, quote, "Back in the mid-70s, I lived in L.A., San Fernando Valley. Every Sunday afternoon, I would drive down to Culver City to dine at Tito's Tacos. Then I would head up to the Venice Fox Theater to catch whatever movies were playing. And most of the time, the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo would open for the movies. One of the most perfect Sunday afternoons was Tito's, the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo, and Pink Flamingos," which is a John Waters film. "Life does not get any more surreal than that. I was fortunate to see them live many times." Here's another one, quote, "Back in the mid-70s, I lived in Huntington Beach, California. There used to be a small venue music theater on PCH, which is the Pacific Coast Highway, in downtown Huntington Beach called the Golden Bear. From time to time, they would feature the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo. Danny Elfman was the fire breather in the act, and he would stand in the median of the divided road, the Pacific Coast Highway, and do his flame breathing as cars passed by," end quote. That's right, I've actually read several accounts that says that Danny Elfman knew how to be a fire breather and would do it in the middle of the freeway in order to promote the show. That's amazing. Now, around 1979, the group has been going for several years at this point, older brother Richard Elfman, who started the group, decided to leave the band to pursue filmmaking. And he left the leadership of the Mystic Knights to his younger brother Danny, who was already the music director. But Richard did enlist the band for his feature film directorial debut. The result is a cult film called The Forbidden Zone, with, honestly, some objectionable content. But it's significant because it is technically the first time Danny Elfman ever wrote a film score. Now, around this same time, Danny Elfman also decided to change the band for a couple of reasons. One, he's mentioned that the amount of gear that they were having to haul around at that time between various instruments and costumes, not to mention personnel, practically required a semi-truck. He wanted a more pared-down version of the band moving forward. Reason number two, he became interested in a style of music called ska with the emergence of bands like Madness and XTC. Ultimately, he shortened the name of the band to just simply Oingo Boingo, an 8-piece band consisting of guitar, bass, drums, keys, vocals, and a 3-piece horn section. After creating an EP, they quickly got a record deal, and their early music was ferocious.
Society's made him go astray. Perhaps if we're nice, he'll go away. Perhaps he'll go away, go away. Who do you want to be today?
They released a few great albums in the early 80s, but in 1985, everything changed. For Oingo Boingo and for future film composer Danny Elfman, the movie business came a-calling.
And now for a brief intermission.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We return now to the Soundtrack Show.
How did the Mystic Knights and later Oingo Boingo leave its mark on Danny Elfman's film music? That's the question we're trying to get to here. Particularly, how did it contribute to the sound of the famous Tim Burton-Danny Elfman collaborations? Let's quickly examine how these two creatives came together and dive into their first film, Pee-wee's Big Adventure from 1985. Actor Paul Reubens was studying with an improv company here in L.A. called The Groundlings, which is still an improv show and a school on Melrose Avenue. Still exists today. Yours truly actually studied there for a couple of years back in 2012 and 2013. I did the classes, and I joined an improv team, and I did Improv Olympics and Second City West and blah, blah, blah. And I can tell you that what I saw was really fascinating. I mean, that place really is a breeding ground for all kinds of careers in entertainment. In fact, The Groundlings has been regularly contributing members to the cast of Saturday Night Live over the years, as well as writers and performers all over the industry. Anyway, in the late 1970s, Paul Reubens was one of those groundlings. And at the time, he was inventing and creating multiple characters, including a wannabe comedian named Pee-wee Herman. After almost having the chance to join the cast of SNL in 1980, along with Eddie Murphy, but being cut at the very last minute, Reubens poured all of his efforts into that Pee-wee Herman character and even produced a successful live show which eventually led to a special on HBO. This special caught the attention of executives at Warner Brothers Pictures, who gave him a deal to write a film based on the Pee-wee Herman character. When Reubens was considering who would direct this movie, his friend, actress Shelley Duvall, recommended a young, talented animator who had just written and directed a couple of shorts for Disney named Tim Burton. She had also worked with him on one of those shorts, which was called Frankenweenie in 1984.
I think Sparky looked cute.
He's not cute, he's handsome.
Anybody want any chocolate chip cookies?
Reubens, who had already seen Vincent, his other short, watched Frankenweenie and immediately was taken by it so much that he wanted him to direct because of his bold, strong art direction and aesthetic.
There was so much style behind the other two things that I had seen, Vincent and Frankenweenie. I mean, that was immediately when I had seen Vincent, I believe, on television. I don't know where I saw it, but I had seen it, but I didn't connect you to it. I didn't realize that was your film when I saw Frankenweenie. And when I saw Frankenweenie in the first, like, few seconds of it, I went, you know, there's style involved in this and art direction. And I was looking, you know, the common theory, I think it still exists, actually, is that if you're doing comedy, you don't need art direction. And
or stereo or other things that they said. No,
and,
we don't need that.
And I was so interested in someone who was really interested in art direction and you know, in bringing some sort of style to it. And I mean, not some sort of style, a lot of style, high style.
Meanwhile, Paul Rubens was also interested in Danny Elfman, whose music he had heard when watching that cult film that I mentioned earlier, The Forbidden Zone. At the same time, Tim Burton was also interested in Elfman because Burton liked his work with Oingo Boingo, so both had come into play. But man, a lot was happening for Danny Elfman and Oingo Boingo in 1985. Filmmaker John Hughes had asked Elfman to write a song for his current project, Weird Science. Elfman apparently wrote the song in his head on the car ride home after the meeting, and the song was released with the film later that August, as well as being released on Boingo's album, Dead Man's Party, that October.
From my heart and from my hand, why don't people understand my intention? Weird science, elastic tubes and pots and pans, bits and pieces and magic from the hand will make it weird science. Seen before, behind bolted doors, talent and imagination. Weird science, not what teachers said to do. Making dreams come true, living tissue, warm flesh. Weird science, oh, plastic tubes and pots and pans, bits and pieces, bits and pieces, bits of my creation. Is it real?
That song went on to be a huge hit for Oingo Boingo, and is one of the first major film credits of Elfman's career. So, around that same time, when Tim Burton asked to speak with Elfman about music for a movie, Elfman just assumed that it was for writing a song. When he was asked instead about scoring the film, he was apparently shocked.
Paul Rubens knew my work through The Mystic Nights, because I did a late-night cult movie, although it wasn't for an orchestra. It was with about 11 players, and that was called The Forbidden Zone. And Tim Burton, I think, knew my work through the band, Oingo Boingo, years later. And so they called me in for a meeting, and I had no idea why, and I think I did a pretty good job, I thought, of trying to unsell myself. I thought they were kind of crazy for trying to hire me. But they persisted. And in short, I ended up going home and doing a demo of an idea. I didn't know what it meant or why. I didn't think too much of it, sent it off. And that demo ended up becoming later recorded as the main titles to Pee-wee's Big Adventure. You got to realize I was terrified when I started this movie. I was really convinced that I was going to destroy their movie. And I finally had, after many sleepless nights, I decided, what the hell, if they're willing to take the chance, I will go ahead and destroy their movie with my music.
Man, it's wild to hear such a successful film composer speak so candidly about his self-doubt. It just goes to show how easy it is to take these kinds of creative projects for granted as an audience member. Anyway, he goes on to describe what it was like getting back up to speed and learning how to score a movie.
I am completely self-taught. I never had any musical training at all. Funny that I went to Cal Arts as a non-student around the same time that Paul Rubens and Tim Burton were there, but we never met. And since I never paid tuition, I think I was kind of hiding out down in the ethnic music department. But in the Mystic Night days, I taught myself to write because we started doing these very elaborate pieces. And my great triumph was my Oingo Boingo Piano Concerto No. 1.5. And after that, the theater group disbanded. And I didn't write again for 6 years or something like that. And suddenly I get this movie. And at the point when I left the Mystic Knights, my writing, I was able to communicate what I wanted, but it was far from slick composition. And I had to retrain myself from scratch. The first week was a real stay up all night sweating kind of a thing, because I had to go back and tell myself, I used to do this, I used to do this, I can do it again, I could do it again. And it was really scary until finally I started remembering, oh yeah, 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 that's how it works. And like I said, thank God it was such a simple score, because it enabled me to find my footing again and get back to where I was 6 years previously when I was able to get music down on paper.
What he ended up producing, however, was a score that was so intriguing, so fresh, that I remember it sticking in my head even as a kid. When I was a kid, I'd never heard music like that before. And when it was combined with Tim Burton's art direction and the comedy and writing of Paul Rubens, what you ended up having is this zany, off-kilter, and ironic comedy. Like, on the surface, it feels like a kid's movie, but it's actually both a kid's movie and a strange satire of a kid's movie, with adult gags running through it. Let's go ahead and listen to the main theme of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which all stemmed from a four-track demo. This is the cue that started Danny Elfman's film career. Other incredible cues from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, such as this cue, Elfman's favorite, called the Breakfast Machine. This really takes inspiration from a 1937 tune by Raymond Scott called Powerhouse. Piece of music was famously used by Carl Stalling, the composer for the Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies cartoons for Warner Brothers.
What's up, Doc?
What's up?
That's how I first heard it. I'm sure Elfman was the same way. In the 2000 DVD commentary for Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Elfman even mentions Carl Stalling right here.
I think in retrospect, the really cool thing about having this as my first score was really learning how to do timings. In a comedy like this, you have to catch so much. And it made me really appreciate Carl Stalling and how he did what he did. But by the time I was done with Pee-wee's Big Adventure, I felt like I really had it nailed, that I was able to catch just about anything. Of course, in the beginning, it was absolutely terrifying. And by the end, I felt like, yeah, lay it on me.
Later in the movie, When Pee-wee's bicycle is stolen, you can hear Danny Elfman channel the work of Bernard Herrmann in this all-string cue, very reminiscent of Psycho. And even later, you can even hear him quote Miss Gulch's theme or the Wicked Witch of the West theme written by Herbert Stoddart for The Wizard of Oz. When Pee-wee is riding his bike trying to escape the Warner Brothers lot. What you have here is Elfman bringing all of his love of film music to bear on Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And while there are a lot of different influences that I just cited, there is one musical through line to this entire score that is uniquely Elfman. This almost cabaret, circus-inspired music that drives the absurdity of Burton's whole film. One possible explanation for this cabaret circus type of music is that it is inspired by the music of Italian composer Nino Rota, who, besides famously writing music for Romeo and Juliet and the Godfather movies, is closely associated with Italian director Federico Fellini and his comedies from the 1960s, such as La Dolce Vita or Eight and a Half.
Nino Rota was who popped into my head when I first saw Pee-wee's Big Adventure as my inspiration, because I think the first sight of him on the bicycle made me think of him not as an American character, but as some kind of otherworldly, or it almost reminded me of a crazy European film, and I wanted to give it that slant, which is another reason why I thought that my concept of where I would take the music in that direction would never go, never fly with the studio and with Tim and Paul, but it did.
Tim Burton has this art direction that is part German expressionism. By the way, there's a great film from 1920 called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which if you look at the sets, they're these weird, twisted, expressionist painted sets that look like they're straight out of Beetlejuice or like a nightmare sequence from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It's part that expressionism, it's part Roald Dahl and those illustrations, and part Shel Silverstein. It's gothic horror, but it's always somewhat detached, in that it isn't truly scary. It's got this ironic distance to it. And Elfman's music? It comes across like this gothic cabaret, like the music of the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo playing at gothic horror. I think that Elfman's background in the circus, his time in Africa, and of course his many years as the musical director and performer in the Mystic Knights shines through in these early Tim Burton films. If you like take that oompa that I was playing earlier, like kind of like in Kurt Weill's music or old cabaret music, and you darken it a bit for a gothic twist, like instead of going down to this fifth, what if I went down to the tritone? This is like classic Elfman here. Or maybe darken it a little bit more, you know, so it's something like... I mean, that's not a piece of Elfman's, but it's very in that vein, that style. And then if you were to orchestrate that with a full orchestra, you end up with a sound that is so unique and, in my opinion, is the crucial ingredient to Tim Burton's films. It's music that sounds like Tim Burton, because they both speak the same language. It manifests itself in that style based purely on Elfman's Mystic Knights upbringing and the type of music that they played. And Burton and Elfman's common ground together was a healthy dose of joy that they derived from their shared love of the camp in old horror and science fiction films.
I think that one of the reasons Tim and I hit it off was because we grew up on so many of the same films. There was a common thread, a common language. Although we've never really talked that much about it, it just always seems to be there. I seem to understand what he's talking about through the dialogue of these films that we both grew up on. His idol was Vincent Price, mine was Peter Lorre, the Hammer films, the Corman films, the melodrama, the horror. We both just loved that stuff. I couldn't get enough of it.
Again, the camp providing a sense of detached irony. By the way, fun side story, much of Pee-wee's Big Adventure was filmed on the Warner Brothers lot, and while they were shooting their film, the Goonies had their pirate ship lagoon up and running on Stage 16 right next door.
I remember when we were shooting some of this, they were shooting the Goonies next door to us, and it was a very close set. And I was one of the only people who got to go. I had like carte blanche to go in anytime I wanted because all the kids were Pee-wee fans.
That's right.
I was like a big star on the Goonies set. It was really fun.
I remember that. It was like the biggest set in the... They had that whole big Stage 16, I think.
With the lagoon and the waterfalls and everything.
Weird Science was released in the U.S. on August 2nd, 1985. A week later, Pee-wee's Big Adventure was widely released in theaters on August 9th, 1985. A small metaphor for how film scoring was going to follow Elfman's career as a rock star. Elfman scored films with other directors quickly after Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but a few short years later, in 1988, the film that Burton and Elfman would do next would forever crystallize their style together as collaborators when they conjured a certain bio-exorcist up onto the silver screen.
The Soundtrack Show will continue in a moment. We return now to the Soundtrack Show.
My inspiration for this whole thing started about 11. I lived around the block from a movie theater in Baldwin Hills, California. It was called the Baldwin Hills Theater. And by my recollection, I spent about every weekend of my life there. I would sneak in the theater over and over again, and I would see movies 5, 6, 7 times. And I became a fan of film and film music as a teenager. I used to go 2-3 nights a week whenever I could get away to these repertory houses, and they would play a different double bill every night of the week for $1 a night. And that was my continuing education, because then I learned about Polanski and Fellini and all my other favorites, and rediscovered Bernard Herrmann through Hitchcock's earlier movies, which I didn't see as a kid, and realized, of course, that that same name that I used to love seeing on the screen when I was a kid meant so much more, and that there was many other sides to him. And he became the model of the perfect composer, because I felt like he could do anything. He could do drama, he could do romance, he could do quirky comedy, he could play it light, he could play it heavy.
It should be said, for the record, that Danny Elfman is more than just his collaboration with Tim Burton. While this is a very famous collaboration, he has more than proven himself able to do other diverse film scores, even back in the 1980s. Elfman was immediately off and running after Pee-wee's Big Adventure. In 1986, when Oingo Boingo was asked to participate in Rodney Dangerfield's comedy Back to School, Elfman gladly accepted, and they can be seen in a party scene in Dangerfield's dorm room playing their then-current hit, Dead Man's Party. But part of the deal for Elfman to do Back to School also included him penning the film score, which Elfman did brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
projects came his way, including Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Amazing Stories, Summer School starring Mark Harmon, and more. But in 1988, Tim Burton returned with the film that really solidified his artistic direction, and Elfman's as well. The film is Beetlejuice, starring Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis, and Michael Keaton. I want to play the opening musical sequence of Beetlejuice, and let's notice how much Elfman's writing and his Tim Burton musical style had matured in just 3 short years. I'm just blown away by this in retrospect. Here we have what I like to coin as a fully realized doompaw. And it captures the wackiness that is present in Michael Keaton's performance, the gloomy nature of the story, but also the tongue-in-cheek camp that is present in the horror. It's amazing how much tone is being so accurately and clearly expressed on screen. Even as a kid, I immediately got it. It's spooky, but it's also kind of funny. In a detached sort of way. Beetlejuice is remarkable in that you have two creatives speaking the same language in their separate disciplines, and it forever solidified one of the most important and long-lasting collaborations in movie history. And Danny Elfman was just getting started. What he and Tim Burton did next would forever leave a wonderfully creative mark on popular culture. Thank you so much for all your comments on social media and, of course, your emails. I read every single one. Please drop us a line at soundtrackshowpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram at SoundtrackShowHSW or on Twitter at SoundtrackHSW. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at David W. Collins. Thank you. The Soundtrack Show is an iHeartRadio podcast. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.